Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. Hello, and welcome to this latest podcast from the OIES. This one is brought to you by the China Energy Programme. My name is Michal Maidan, I head China research at the Institute, and I'm joined today by Anders Hovey, who's Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. We are talking today about green power certificates, which is an issue that doesn't get too much attention outside of China power market circles. But Anders has written about this. There are sort of changes underway in China, which we think are worth understanding and looking at. His new paper will be available on our website very shortly, and I am delighted to be chatting with you, Anders, today about it. So can we start out by, first of all, in a sentence or two, can you explain to us what are green certificates and how do they fit into power markets and what are we even talking about?
Green certificates are a little bit of a difficult concept, first of all, just to get your mind around. It is, as the name implies, a certificate or a financial instrument, a proof of purchase to recognize payment for green energy. And in China, that is limited to wind and solar. So green certificates do not cover hydro, which China produces vastly more hydropower than wind and solar, but the policy only covers wind and solar. And I think that they're often compared to the renewable energy certificate in the United States, also known as RECs. And also in Europe, there is guarantee of origin or GOES, so RECs and GOES, and therefore the green certificate is sometimes called the GEC. Basically, it does allow a company or a purchaser, but mostly these are companies that would be purchasing them, to claim credit for having purchased 1 megawatt hour or 1,000 kilowatt hours of electricity. But this is not a purchase of physical electricity, so there's no claim that you actually use that electricity yourself. It's simply that you paid the generator of that electricity a premium to be the only person who is able to claim to have purchased the environmental attributes of the green electricity that was produced. So they can sell 1 megawatt hour of green certificates for every megawatt hour that they produce. In the case of China, that is production over a whole year. So you just take the amount of production, you sell that many green certificates, and then nobody else can claim to be purchasing that generator's power. And essentially, this policy is intended, both in China and outside of China, to be an additional way to encourage the adoption of clean energy, to generate additional revenue for clean energy generation, and to ensure that companies that are claiming to be producing green energy or deriving their production from green energy to make sure that that's somehow traceable and trackable and not just a greenwashing claim. So that's the background and purpose of green certificates in general.
Sounds like we're sort of crowdfunding the green attributes of the power sector. Why do it in China then? Why did China adopt the green certificate? What's the background to that?
I think there are basically two important pieces of background that led China to adopt the green certificate program back in 2017. Number one was the problem of curtailment of wind and solar power. That's when wind and solar power could be producing electricity, but the grid cannot accept it, either because of high prices or regulations or physical constraints, bottlenecks. The second reason was that at that time already, 2017, and continuing till today, there has been a problem of a deficit in the subsidy payments for the feed-in tariff that was legally promised to renewable generators. And this deficit was created by the way that the surcharge for renewable energy was set up originally. The surcharge is basically on almost all electricity sales. There's a very small surcharge. Renewable energy production grew faster than the revenue from this surcharge. Even after the government raised the surcharge several times, there was still a deficit in this fund. And so the government thought, if we could persuade individuals and companies that they should pay a little bit of extra for renewable energy, maybe we could get them to pay some of this surcharge revenue that is obligated already by the government. And essentially, this second point was the most important motivation of the government, but I would say it was also one of the most important reasons why the policy was not very successful.
I mean, why would a buyer want to pay up for something that he doesn't really have to?
Well, there are a lot of different reasons why companies are motivated to purchase these certificates. And the market in the world has been growing dramatically for RECs and guarantees of origin because companies do want to be able to claim credit for having purchased clean energy, but they're not necessarily physically able to do so, or the market for doing so might not really be possible for them to access. And I think a good example is how Microsoft or Google or Amazon, Facebook, these companies, which are major electricity consumers, generally claim to be consuming clean energy, renewable energy, and they're big enough and they have a long history. They're confident that they're going to be around for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So they can do a power purchase agreement with a renewable generator, or they can own their own renewable generators if they want to. Most companies do not have those characteristics like, you know, the Fortune 500 companies do, including many companies that have international operations or have supply chains that consist of very small companies that might not have been in existence for a long time, to be able to claim those environmental attributes, even though you or your suppliers are not confident enough or not able to sign a PPA. That is the reason why they would want to go out and purchase this very short-term instrument of just 1 megawatt hour or whatever is necessary to cover that portion of production that you need to claim that you are using clean energy for. That's the motivation. And that's why companies are willing to pay. But they're not willing to pay a huge premium for this green energy, because after all, it doesn't come with the physical electricity. You are just buying the certificate. That certificate itself is not necessarily going to be credited by all consumers. So essentially where these certificates do trade, they do trade at a very tiny premium to what would be the electricity price in those regions, except in China, where essentially the government, by saying that this green certificate simply was a transfer of the subsidy payment obligation from the government to the purchaser of the green certificate. For that reason, the generators did not feel that they could at any time sell the green certificate for any less than the obligation that the government had to pay the subsidy. In other words, whatever the feed-in tariff subsidy was for wind and for solar, that is precisely the level that most wind and solar plants would offer their green certificates for, which would typically be like a 100% premium to the price of electricity or a 50% premium to the price of electricity. And for that reason, there was almost no interest in purchasing these certificates from any company, including international companies that have operations in China. They would tend to try to purchase the equivalent, like a REC or a GO, in another market in order to be able to claim that globally they have renewable energy that provides their electricity, instead of buying these extremely highly priced certificates in China.
I mean, your paper, you go into a lot of detail about the feed-in tariffs and the evolution of that and some of the international comparisons. What kind of price levels are we talking about, both for the green certificates and the feed-in tariffs? Can you just give us some context about how significant that is?
It's a really complicated question to answer because the feed-in tariff was introduced over a decade ago for wind initially, and then it was expanded to solar. And initially, the feed-in tariff was extremely generous. For solar PV, the first projects, they had a feed-in tariff of 1 RMB per kilowatt hour. And essentially, that was more than 100% premium to the electricity price in China. It's almost three times the price of electricity in China. So that feed-in tariff for solar was reduced gradually over time, and the same thing was true for wind, and then eventually the feed-in tariff subsidy premium has been essentially eliminated. Depending on the vintage or the year that the wind or solar plant started operating, that would be the price premium that they would offer on the green certificate market. And again, they were offering the price, but there weren't any buyers, or essentially there was almost no volume. I think for wind, it was 0.15% of the green certificates that were issued were actually purchased. And for solar, it was something like 0.01%. So essentially, there was no green certificate market except the policy existed. Other than that, it was not having an effect up until recently. As I said, recently, the wind and solar have not really had this feed-in tariff subsidy. And as a result, they're able to offer green certificates at less of a price premium. But still, they're offering 50 RMB per megawatt hour. That would still be a pretty significant premium to the regular electricity sales. If you want to compare to the premiums that are offered in the United States or in Europe, we're talking about $1 per megawatt hour or less than 1 euro per megawatt hour for these certificates. As I mentioned, you're not purchasing the physical electricity. So it's definitely not something where people are willing to put up a 10% premium for this certificate.
It doesn't sound like a hugely successful initiative, certainly not in China, maybe not even in the rest of the world. The GOES and the RECs and the GECs just sound like very funky acronyms, but maybe not the most successful policy. And if that's the case, why are we talking about it now? And maybe you sort of alluded to a number of changes. Is it going to become more relevant going forward?
I think we could debate about whether the REC and GO policies have been successful and whether they have contributed to the renewable energy transition, even though they're certainly getting more popular in terms of trading volume in the United States and Europe. But as to whether they've really encouraged the renewable energy transition, renewable adoption, I'm not so sure that that's the case. They are important, I think, for the private sector because there is corporate interest in purchasing these securities. And I think that in China, now that the FIT subsidy has ended, the government has recognized that probably this green certificate policy there in China had not been a success so far. And essentially, the objective of using the green certificates to clear the subsidy backlog or the deficit in subsidy payments, that was never going to pan out, especially now that there are unsubsidized projects coming onto the market and seeking to find private buyers of their electricity. So given that recognition in China, I think that the government is encouraging renewable generators to sell what is termed as the excess output via these green certificates. And basically, there is also now the possibility that there might be secondary trading of these certificates. Up until now, green certificates were only available for the first-time purchase from the generators through a centralized platform or through a trading center, but there was no trading, properly speaking, in these green certificates. And I think the government recognizes it could become a way for companies to determine what the appropriate price level is for these certificates. Again, not purchasing the physical electricity, but what's the appropriate price level for that right to claim the environmental attributes. And there are also some other functions that the green certificate could help with in China. For example, if foreign enterprises or international enterprises or even supply chain upstream companies in China are purchasing green energy abroad and claiming credit for it to basically offset the electricity consumption in China, the government may view that as a lost opportunity to collect some additional revenue, even if a small amount, for renewable generators in China. I think also it is a way to gradually transition away from subsidies, even though I think the government has recognized that the FIT subsidies must be paid by the government, not by green certificates. Nevertheless, even unsubsidized renewables could benefit from some additional revenue streams other than just the power markets, the wholesale power markets, and 20-year contracts for power with off-takers. This is a way to make renewable energy projects potentially more bankable, to improve the financing conditions for renewables, including distributed renewables. A final area, which I think is quite intriguing, is the idea that under the CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, it's possible that companies might be able to claim credit for having purchased renewable energy to back up their operations. And in that case, a green certificate might or might not be a credible way of claiming that the production processes were zero carbon or lower carbon on average than if it was simply using conventional energy or electricity from the grid. It's very unclear whether that would qualify for the CBAM, and it's also unclear how that would work in the Chinese context, where it's quite clear that the carbon market and the green certificates are to be kept very separate. There is no credit for carbon reductions that companies can claim as a result of having purchased a green certificate, even though the government has also said that the green certificate should basically cover all environmental attributes. Apparently, that does not include carbon for the purposes of the carbon market.
Right. Well, as with China, there are always these interesting contradictions in some of the policies. But it does sound like things are getting, I guess, better. And we know one of these eternal contradictions that markets tend to play a secondary role in driving outcomes in China. So going forward, what kind of role do you expect these green certificates to play in China's decarbonization efforts and in renewable deployment?
First of all, as I said, I don't think that they played a very big role or any role significantly in expanding renewable energy to date in China. And yet renewables have grown tremendously in China over the last years. And that continues now, even though subsidies have been removed in most cases. I think that green certificates will play some role, whether that role is largely in helping the private sector clean up its operations. It's possible this could go in several different directions. For example, it might become more of an obligatory market, for example, enabling state-owned enterprises and provinces to meet government-mandated obligations for a certain percentage of renewable energy or wind and solar electricity to use the green certificates as a quota trading mechanism for such an obligation. That would completely change the game in terms of whether there's demand for the certificates, obviously. If the certificates remain mostly a voluntary mechanism, then I think that there still will be demand. You can see that there's a trend of rising demand for these certificates. There are going to continue to be companies that want to purchase some sort of green certificate. And the question is simply, as I said, whether they purchase that in China or if equally or more credible instrument in another market and use that to claim credit for their operations in China. As I said in the paper, I think that there's some interesting questions about international markets for similar green certificates that would basically change the credibility of the green certificate in China if there's a significant evolution in the way these markets trade outside of China. One problem with green certificates is as we go towards a system with high penetration of renewables, especially in places like California, where there's a midday oversupply of electricity, if green certificates are offering a premium for just undifferentiated any megawatt hour of production at any time of day, anywhere in the world, that's a premium that could act as a kind of perverse incentive to produce more energy without regard to when or where it's being produced. And of course, power markets are eager to incentivize and have prices that reveal when and where power is needed. Power markets in Europe and America have very much been instrumental in leading to installation of new storage facilities, for example. So green certificates could contribute to this if they were able to acknowledge when and where the renewable energy is being produced. And so that's where the concept of 24/7 time matching has come about. It is actually being implemented in the United States, not everywhere, but in certain regions of the United States now, time matching of renewables is available optionally. It's not required anywhere. This is all voluntary. It's all up to what the companies say they want. And only a few companies have said they are really interested in this. But also in Europe, the guarantee of origin policy may evolve in this direction because ENTSO-E, the European Network of Transmission System Operators for Electricity, they have said that they think that this is necessary for this incentive to shift from just a purely undifferentiated market for GOES to one that's incentivizing time matching and something that's basically aligned with the direction of wholesale power market reforms in Europe anyway. So if that happens, then I think that the credibility of green certificates outside of China will go up quite a bit, and it might actually play a more significant role in enabling renewable energy transition by essentially incentivizing new renewables when and where they're needed. And I think that if that is successful, it could encourage governments to do more with the green certificates. Unfortunately, that would incentivize companies to look elsewhere outside of China to purchase their green certificates. If green certificates that are just for any megawatt hour produced anywhere in the world from any source of energy at any time are no longer viewed as credible by governments or by regular consumers, then that would definitely lessen the attractiveness of Chinese green certificates. And I think consumer groups do matter here. If companies are doing this primarily to claim credit with consumers, when NGOs come out with statements saying that green certificates are a type of greenwashing, well, that will definitely affect the value of green certificates. It will definitely affect the direction of policy because right now, both in China and outside of China, these types of certificates are largely a voluntary instrument. It is something that companies are doing for their own reputation. So how the policy is designed, what the green certificates look like, that is very important to how they're perceived by companies and by the primary market target, which is large multinational enterprises and the supply chains that back them up.
Do we know in China who are the biggest purchasers of these green certificates, whether they're state-owned or private? And is it sort of for them, it goes to the point of the reputational element, who are the ones that are kind of more worried or I guess more at the forefront of trying to look greener?
Right now, the companies that have been on the record as having made the largest purchases are generally large multinational brand names, consumer-facing brand names. A couple that I'll mention would be BASF, as well as BMW, and finally also Sumitomo, interestingly enough. So a few international companies that have made big purchases on their own account, but I think also urging their supplier networks and smaller companies that are not necessarily brand names, but would enable the larger brand, let's say, Apple or Microsoft, to be able to claim that their Chinese operations, including the supply chain, are supported by renewable energy. They are also going to probably be in this market.
So I guess a natural follow-up question to that is, what should companies know about China's green certificates? Should they be watching this market? Are there any signposts to follow on whether it is becoming more or less significant for them to follow it?
This is definitely something for companies to watch, even though with all of the problems that the green certificates have had from the outset in 2017, and I think that there are still many questions about whether this will become an effective instrument, I think that companies with operations or upstream suppliers in China should be paying attention to this market. They are an option for companies to be able to pursue sustainable operations. Whether they are, let's say, perceived as worth it depends on multiple factors. And I would say in terms of being able to claim credit for greening one's upstream operations, green certificates will never be as good as, let's say, signing a power purchase agreement or installing one's own renewables or simply reducing emissions directly in some ways. So what does paying attention to green certificates mean? Basically, it means paying attention to what are the specific policies that are backing up the green certificate policy in China. What incentives is the government suggesting, both positive and negative, for companies to purchase green certificates? There is looming behind everything this statement that green certificates should be the sole way to claim credit for green power. If companies, for example, with international operations, including in China, claim to be 100% clean energy, but none of that is coming from Chinese clean energy, they could be potentially at some risk in China because they're making a claim, even albeit externally, that is not covered by backing with green certificates or equivalent purchases in China. So there's a little bit of a risk there. It's not explicit risk, but it's maybe something to be aware of. There's also some potentially positive incentives that you could imagine. For example, we've had a number of years now where there have been power shortages, and there is a policy called orderly power consumption where different enterprises are going to be targeted for power cuts or rolling blackouts. And if different corporate practices mean that you could move up or down that list of who gets to have their power cut last, then it's definitely worth considering paying a little bit of a premium for green energy. I definitely think that that is a possibility because in the past, China has definitely said that purchasers of green energy should be lower priority for power cuts. So ultimately, for any company that is having operations in China and also making claims or seeking to improve their ESG performance, environmental, social, and governance performance in China, I think that green certificates are a policy area that they need to watch.
In your paper, you talk a lot about the policies, the incentives, you talk about some of the challenges. So I would definitely encourage our readers to check out that paper. I think we are at the end of our time for today. So again, anyone wanting any additional information, and there's a huge amount of detail and analysis in that paper, I would encourage you to check it out on our website. Anders, thank you very much. And to our audience, thank you very much for listening and joining us today, and we hope you will join us for our next podcast. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.